Hello, ladies. Yes, I did say ladies. Any gentleman out there listening, go screw yourself. Welcome to Black and a Half.
You just assume that
I don't know,
there's
I
a lot
feel,
of women.
I just feel like there is.
A lot of, yeah. They like listen to the brother.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to, let's go listen to Django.
Ladies, if you're sitting in the bathtub right now listening to Black and a Half, I just want to say this is like the podcast version of Django. I like
that. Meets Shades of Grey.
Meets Shades of, yeah. 50, this is... What are me and Silas? 69 Shades of Grey, baby. That's right. So stupid.
They're not hacky jokes.
Yeah.
Okay, I did the competition, the Shades of Laughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's like, 50 Shades of Laughter. I'm like, please stop.
Oh,
everyone's doing the joke.
Jesus.
Like, welcome to Black and a Half, though.
Yeah, welcome to Black and a Half. What you got? Who is it? Anthony Calderon was talking about how mad he was at Shades, 50, not 50 Shades of Grey. 50, was it Shades of...
Shades of Laughter?
Shades of Laughs. Yeah, yeah. Shades of Laughter. But, anyways, we talked him down off the ledge.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the Anthony Calderon today, though.
No, we're not.
We talked to
C.J. West.
Yes, author.
Author.
An author.
And author.
That's all he is.
And, well, he used to be a golfer. That's right. And a businessman.
Yeah.
So, the guy's a...
Now big ebook publisher.
Now big ebook publisher. Tours around. He was just in San Francisco.
Yeah.
With the...
promoting his books.
Promoting his books. It's like the Comic-Con of books.
Yeah.
So it was
interesting.
Pretty, yeah.
So he's on today. We talked to him via Skype. So
Skype.
It's a little different.
It was. It was. It took a little getting used to. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
had a
he's
blast.
Out in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And so we get to hear about his books, different books that he wrote.
Yeah. We actually interviewed Silas's mom for the test run, and that was phenomenal because she's hot.
Throw that in there. Stop it.
I'm just kidding.
I hate this man.
Yeah, she's
I
beautiful, though.
We're breaking up.
Yeah,
this
sorry.
Is the last
yeah,
episode,
this is the last
of, Black
episode
and
of Black and a Half because Manny will probably be dead after that.
Horrible.
Horrible.
Okay. So, yeah. Enjoy this episode.
Yeah.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out.
Hello? Hey, Silas, how are you?
Good, CJ, how are you doing?
Super, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Are you both here already?
Yeah.
Yes. What's
going on?
Nice to see you, Manny.
Hey.
Hey, guys. I was just listening to your interview with Boyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. That's how I found you guys.
Oh, nice. I knew you listened to him. I didn't know if you guys were friends or if...
Well,
just...
friends, colleagues, we've had dinner a few times, done a panel or two, and, you know how we do the trade shows for fans, and we sit up there in front of a bunch of people and talk. And,
like a panel? Like a Comic-Con
yeah.
for authors?
Yeah.
Oh,
right,
that's
exactly.
Awesome.
So are we doing this without video?
I'm okay with without video.
Okay.
Yeah, we're naked right now, so this I don't want to make it awkward or anything, so...
This is our first
I guess so. What Skype
stuff? Yeah, our first Skype one. So it's
okay,
used to seeing the person.
Did Boyd come to visit you guys?
Yeah, Boyd lives near me.
Yeah, I saw that you guys were out there. He's in Seattle, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in Seattle. Yeah, I'd known Boyd. I'd met him a while ago. I was on a board of directors for a play that he was in.
Oh, that's right. He's an actor, isn't he?
Yes, yes. Fun actor. Fun guy.
Yeah, he likes to play women and stuff.
It's Seattle. Who doesn't like
yeah,
to play women?
Yeah, exactly.
I like to play with women. I don't like to play with
There you go. Oh, man. So, CJ, we were reading. Wait, do you act a little bit? Or?
You know what? I did. I started something really fun. And Manny, I have to tell you, I was listening to your show, and you guys are really funny.
No, thanks, man.
So far above the typical shows we do. That's why I'm really excited to be here with you guys. I started doing something. I was a really shy guy. And I started doing author events. And one of the things I did was murder mystery shows, like a live show.
Oh, nice.
And, we try to kill somebody during the show while the show's going on. And it's not a stage show. It's more... it's like a dinner show with no dinner. You know, we're mingling with people the whole, say, 3 or 4 hours.
Nice.
And I got a little more comfortable with acting, so I typically write the shows and direct the shows. And I've had a ball with it. I never realized that I could be that comfortable until one of my last shows. I went out with a Rock and Rollers big blonde wig on. And, you know, for a guy who's not comfortable in front of 200 people, you know, it's kind of scary, but it was a lot of fun.
I hear you.
And, you know, it's funny. I think you probably get this in comedy, Manny, is that people want to have a good time. They want to enjoy themselves.
Oh, totally.
And if you go out and have a good time, they have a good time, too.
Definitely. You know, that's it's funny that you say that, because before I started doing comedy, I was probably the shyest person, you know, you'll ever meet. And then, you know, kind of once you start getting comfortable in front of, you know, those bigger crowds, and they're there to have a good time. So, you know, you just, it's just an extension of yourself. And it's such a weird thing to finally get out of that shell and just have fun with people.
You know, I'm really surprised to hear you, because I've listened to your stuff and it's really funny. And
wait, you've listened to his stuff?
Oh, just on the podcast.
On the show. And yeah. I saw that.
You know, okay, because if you saw his act, you wouldn't be.
Whatever.
Wow.
You do a live act, though.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a shy guy, and I think one of the things that I miss as being a typically shy guy is the delivery of the punchlines, you know, sort of owning the stage and really delivering.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you kind of overcame that, or if you had the same issues, and how you went from, you know, being a little guy to a big guy.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's definitely a growing process. I'm trying to think, have you ever thought about doing comedy?
I have thought about it, but only probably in nightmares.
There's an author out here, a woman named Barbara Sayre, who is a comedian. She started doing comedy, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. She did it because she had read a book that said, if you want to become a better writer, try doing stand-up comedy.
No kidding.
Yeah, because in comedy, you definitely have to have a word economy, and you have to get your point across really quick, and you're tested immediately.
Right.
You find out.
You have to be able to deliver. It's almost like, what am I thinking of? Confucius, right?
Right.
He has one line that's very simple, but it also has a greater impact the more you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like comedy is the same thing, right? A little parable.
Yeah, so your book, are you self-published?
I am. I self-published before. I started as a hobbyist a long, long time ago. And then I had a movie that I optioned the film rights on.
Right, yeah, we saw that.
What is it, Sin Inventions or whatever?
Yeah, Sin Inventions. And that went to development for a couple of years and didn't make it to screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really excited about that project. But I kind of backed into it. You know, until that happened, I really was just writing for the joy of writing. And now I'm writing, trying to make a living in the whole ebook explosion. I don't know how much you talked to Boyd about it, but Boyd was kind of at the forefront of success in ebooks.
Wow.
He was one of the first guys who, what book did he have? I read it, and I can't think of which one it was. It was the Noah's Ark book.
Oh, yeah. I remember that story.
The Ark. It was called The Ark, right? And he, in 2009, he was one of the guys who got out ahead of the curve.
Mm.
And sold a bazillion ebooks because there was nothing else out there, and he had a good book out there, and people just gobbled it up.
Wow.
He was way out at the forefront, and he's kind of the guy who dragged me along into selling ebooks as opposed to print.
Right.
Right.
And I might sell 1,000 ebooks per one print book now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, is it, because you're self-published, so you don't have an ebook publisher, right?
Well, I publish my ebooks through Amazon.
Right.
So I contract with people.
So we had a guest on here who had talked about she had a publisher,
mm-hmm.
but it was also an ebook through them as well.
Yeah, most publishers will do that. The bummer of that though is I had a good friend who had a small publisher, and she lost so much of her royalty through her publisher. The publisher took 60% of what was coming back from Amazon and the other
retailers.
She was getting very little. I get, you know, guys like me and Boyd, we get 70% of the list price.
Nice.
Which is very cool.
Right. And so have you found it hard? I mean, not that it's easy, but having to do all the self-promotion yourself, do you think if you had a publisher, life would be easier?
Depends on who the publisher is and how excited they are about you. If you have a big publisher that you're really excited about, you are going to do very, very well, you know, because they're going to be in the front of the bookstores and they're going to be selling all kinds of, buying all kinds of ad copy. But if you're not, you can be lost in the shuffle with the publisher taking a big cut out of your royalties, so you can be in a very bad place.
Wow.
Most authors need to be self-promoters, except for the very big guys. And even the big guys, you know, you see like Lee Child out there at the shows,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing big interviews and signing tons of books. Even the big guys are out there doing not to the extent that someone like me does, but you just have to promote books, just the way it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so you don't pursue right now getting a publisher. You're more...
No, I haven't for years, and I never really did. You know, I wrote this book, and I had someone one day grab me by the arm and get all excited about it. And then I got a film option, and I hadn't really looked for a publisher at that point. And I don't know if you guys know what the process is, but it's pretty daunting.
I've heard. It's like...
Yeah, so you're talking to agents and begging people to represent you to publishers who won't talk to you unless you have an agent. And it's just an ugly, ugly process. I just never really went through it.
Yeah. I think, like, here's a question for me. So, like, even with your book, I mean, like, you heard about the whole Jack Reacher thing where the, like, Tom Cruise looked nothing like the actual book, I guess, character.
Right, yep.
So, I mean, like, were they talking about doing that with your book? That they were,
Oh, it was brutal.
Oh.
You know, Lee Child was one of the guys that I talked to when I got my film option, too.
Right.
And one of the things he said, and I don't know if he's saying that now that Tom Cruise has played his character. he said, a film is a $40 million advertisement for your book.
Oh, there you go.
So be happy. Let them do whatever they want and be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Sin and Vengeance is a book. It's about a family of winemakers, and they're being torn apart by this really crazy guy. And they're split between, the family owns wineries all over the world, and they're split between France and Massachusetts at the moment of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of characters. There's a French French woman from the French countryside that the character gets involved in, and there's a detective over there. And when the film was written, they had to streamline the plots. The different plot lines, they had to condense them to get it to 120 minutes. Because if you're going to do a film, you have 120 minutes.
Right.
So they took out some things that I really thought tied the whole thing together.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the things that killed me, I had this woman, she's this sex-starved housewife, right?
Right.
And her husband gets killed. And this other character who is... a policeman. He's a career policeman who's never really gotten to do any real investigative work because he's in the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
And the screenwriter combined those two characters into a gay detective.
What?
From America. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just the demands of the screen are so much different than the demands of the published word, you know, in a book. You can do abstractions a lot better. You know, you can do things that are almost impossible on screen. But on screen, there are some things that play really well. Explosions are awesome. Car chases are awesome.
Right.
You know, so they tried to keep to the core of the story and then still fit it in the time frame and fit the medium. And that's one of the things that I really learned. It was hard, man. When she started, one of the things that happens is there's some money they find in this farmhouse, and the money's actually connected to another one of my books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like an Easter egg kind of a thing.
Right.
And she ripped it out. The first conversation we had, she's, what if we get rid of the money?
Wow. And
I'm standing there, I'm standing in my foyer just looking up like, oh my God, this is going to really suck. I just signed this contract and I'm really screwed.
But,
you know, she, over time I learned, you know, it's the medium. You know, the medium is very, very different.
Yeah.
It's a story told in pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was really lucky, you know, she was good. She came to a couple book groups that I did, virtually. She was on the phone and she had the woman talk to her about things that they wanted to see in the movie, you know, really key scenes and key characters and things they wanted to hear and see. And she was really true to that. She actually added a scene that someone from one of those groups suggested.
Very nice.
I felt really fortunate. I think a lot of times what happens is somebody gets the book, you know, dropped on their desk and their boss tells them to write a screenplay and they just go and write a screenplay.
No.
You know, and I was fortunate that this person really was, she read the book herself and was excited about the book herself. So
that's awesome.
So is, but because it hasn't been produced then yet, is it done? Is it?
Well, it's never dead. You know, nothing ever really dies, you know.
True.
But right now it's languishing. The screenwriter was really excited about it. It went out in Hollywood and it was received well. The coverage was good. You know, they do coverage inside the author's manager's agency will do coverage. You know, people who read the screenplay and say, you know, is this worth making a big movie out of or not? And the coverage was really good. And then it got picked up by a smaller, film company, a smaller studio.
Oh, okay.
And they initially had $1 million budget, and they upped the budget to $3.5 million. And I thought we were going to have a go. We had some guys who were people that I recognized who wanted to be in the movie, wow, wanted to direct or whatever. So I was really excited. You know, I thought we were going to have a movie. And then I guess you need to get all the players to play nice in the sandbox. You know, the actors, director, people who are funding the film, and they could never get that combination of, you know, the leads and the director and the financiers to all sort of nod heads together at the same time.
Yeah.
Did that just kill you as it was going on, thinking like...
Oh, you know, at first, you don't believe it, you know, and then you start working on the screenplay and you hate it, you know. It's just this roller coaster ride up and down. You can't... At first, I couldn't believe she was doing the stuff she was doing to my screenplay. To my, you know, it's like... Who is this, you know, who is this gay woman that you are? You know, and the story changes. And, you know, there were some, you know, she added some interesting stuff and she used actually some of my dialogue was stripped from the book. So that was cool. You know, so that whole process was really a learning process and it was fun. And then it goes out and you're all nervous because if you had a film like Reacher's film, right?
Yeah.
Everyone in the world is seeing that trailer right now. It's all over the place.
True.
And that would take me from, you know, a guy who's struggling hard to make it to a guy who's comfortably living and just writing books as fast as he can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I was on the edge of that for 2 years.
Man.
When you write a book, do you keep in mind at all that, hey, this would be a good film, or do you just keep it, just focus on the book?
I focus on the book, but I think I'm a visual thinker, and I think that lends to something that'll work in a book. Work in a movie, I'm sorry. And sometimes when I'm done with a book, like The End of Marking Time would be a fantastic movie.
Well, tell us about that book. That was a...
The End of Marking Time, you guys are big sci-fi buffs, right?
Yeah.
And I don't really write sci-fi, but people keep bucketing this thing as sci-fi. The End of Marking Time is a book about a guy who is stuck in a futuristic prison. So the Supreme Court of the United States decides that keeping people in prison in jail cells is unconstitutional and forces the government to let them all out.
Wow.
So from there, I go to... I'm sorry, I'm clicking my mouse here.
Oh, that's okay.
So from there, we go to... what are we going to do with the criminals, right? You turn them all loose on the street and they run rampant and start burning the place down is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come up with this thing called re-education, which is kind of like 1984. So they take someone, they pour all these resources into them, right? They put them in an apartment and they don't really know what the rules are per se, but they're watched every minute of the day.
Oh, wow.
All of these people are paid to interact with them. I don't know if you guys saw like the Truman Show or, you know,
Yeah.
But he's being watched by his education counselors, right? So he's got someone helping him with his family and helping him with all the schoolwork that he never did, trying to take away all of the hurdles from him being a successful person in our society. At the same time, they're putting pressure on him to see how he's going to react if he's out in the real world and has the opportunity to cause trouble. Or things don't go right. Is he going to go right back to stealing, you know, the way he was before?
Mm-hmm.
And So people really reacted to that as a sci-fi. The great thing about that as a film is because it's a small number of actors. It's very, very, very tense psychological story. So there's a lot of drama that happens. And in Hollywood, they want to go low budget. You know, not a lot of locations, not a ton of actors.
Right.
The less stuff you blow up, the better, because it's a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that really fits that scenario well. And there's a huge surprise at the end of the book, which most people don't see coming. Nice. The whole book takes place in one room. The guy is trapped in front of a screen and he's talking. And one of the things I did with the book, I don't know, it really works for some people and it doesn't work for everyone, is that the entire book takes place, the guy is trapped in a plexiglass box.
Wow.
And he's facing a window. And he's talking to the reader, so he talks to you directly as you're reading the book. He's telling the story right to you. And every once in a while, he calls you, you know, like, hey, you know, if you were here, you'd be scared of this too.
Yeah. Man.
And then at the end, we come to understand that a lot of what he's been seeing is actors, and it isn't really real.
That is wild.
Hey, this book, it all takes place in one room.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have a lot of other characters come in and out?
Right, so what happens is, in the first chapter of the book, this guy walks into a room, and this plexiglass box shoots out of the floor and traps him in front of a window. And then he's told that you, the audience, are behind the window, right? That you're his jury, and he's telling you the story if he wants to get free.
Yeah.
He tells you the story of his last 2 weeks facing the window, but he never leaves the box.
So, you know what I mean? You know what? This just sounds like it might actually be kind of a cool play, though.
Could be. Yeah, it's a kind of a mind-bending story when you think about the guy is free to do whatever he wants, but everyone he runs into is manipulating him, right? They're manipulating him to put pressure on him, to understand how he's going to react. They're also, at the same time, teaching him and trying to help him.
Wow.
That could be. My background's in theater, so I used to always be looking for scripts and stuff and doing something different. I like the sci-fi bent of things too. So I'd always wanted like a sci-fi play festival.
Definitely. Well, CJ, so you're originally from Boston, right?
Yeah, I'm a little town really near Cape Cod.
Okay.
I know that. I know Cape Cod.
Yeah, Silas grew up in
Massachusetts. I grew up in Massachusetts.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know where Rochester is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know Rochester. I grew up in a little town called Millis out there.
Yeah, I know where Millis is. I spent some time in Wrentham.
Wrentham. They have great names out there. Wrentham. Norfolk.
Oh, that's awesome.
High school, junior high was out there. My mom's out there right now. She's trying to date an African right now, but she's going to be going to Africa. My mother's wild. Hey, do you know police out there? If he comes out there.
Help?
Huh?
Does your mom need help? She needs
I just want when this African comes to visit her, I just want them to scare him.
Away?
No, just put the fear of God into him.
There you go.
That's just what we should do. No foreigners? No, she's okay. She's in love. My mother's newly single.
She's in love, like, over the internet kind of thing?
Yeah, she's dating somebody in Africa through Skype.
Yeah, she's 55 years young, though. So, she's Stella's getting her groove back, so it's exciting to watch.
She said, she's going to go visit Africa for a month, and then he's going to come out there to visit for a little while. I'm like, it's Africa. Can't you just... Her last husband was from Jamaica. They were married for like 30 years.
Well, there you go.
But I'm like, can't you just find somebody at the supermarket?
That's from Seattle?
No, she's in Massachusetts.
I know, but you want her in Seattle, don't you?
I'm okay with the distance.
You just don't want to have to take a plane, a ferry, and two...
Yeah, exactly. To get to a village in Africa. To get
a village in Africa. Like, mm-hmm. Mom, just date someone at the Roach Brothers.
Yeah. So, CJ, let me ask you this. We were reading up on you a little bit, and so It said that you were like you were aiming to be like a professional golfer at one point.
I was when I was young, yeah.
Nice. Still play a little bit?
No, you know what? I don't play golf much anymore.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I took it as a job. I played golf, you know, 8-10 hours a day. I had a 5-gallon bucket of balls.
Wow.
I don't know if you've ever hit many golf balls, but I used to hit that thing twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'd play, you know, somewhere between 18 and 36 holes, and I'd do chipping and putting and whatever.
Wow.
I worked really hard at it, and the problem I had was I didn't have a coach. I was out in the middle of nowhere teaching myself. I think I have a tendency, you're talking about self-publishing, right? I just tend to have a tendency to do things myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I love to play golf. I will never play that well again. You know, at my age, I'm 45. And I can still hit the ball pretty far, but you just kind of lose it after 20 years or so of not doing it every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch what those guys do. It's like, God. So how many years did you actually do that for?
I played from the time I was 12 until around 20 or so.
Oh, okay.
I played golf in college. You know, I practiced really, really hard. And the thing that killed me was I developed some bad habits.
Right.
And putting was one of them. I, like I said, I didn't have a coach. And I didn't have the best equipment. And I used to spin my putts.
Oh, okay.
Which is a really bad thing. I don't know if you guys play golf much, but every putt that I had would break left.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a question of how much does it break left. Even if if someone else putted the ball and it broke right, mine would break left. It was just a couple inches.
Man.
So it was really weird, and I just wasn't very successful.
So I understand you got into to business management instead, or what did you major in?
I majored in business, and I went into I loved computers were my first love.
Oh, okay.
Did little programming. I had my own little computer at home, and I worked on some minis, and you know, I did some C programming and that sort of thing. And I worked for a number of computer networking firms. I worked for Arthur Anderson doing some consulting and some financial firms, and bounced around doing that. And I really loved it. And if I hadn't found writing, I would still be doing it. I really enjoyed the computer field. I think it's got some similar challenges.
Right.
But I started writing, and I just got addicted to it. I write basically every day as much as I can, and if I don't write, it's like almost like not having sex. You get annoyed after.
See, that's how I feel about golf. I get annoyed after a while. Did I used to play? I didn't play golf.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, Massachusetts. One thing I loved out there: the miniature golf courses were all that I went to out there. They all had a you'd hit it through the rabbits. You know, hole. Ears or, yeah, the hole.
Yeah.
it's something fun.
Yeah.
But, like, we started for a little bit going to the golf range out here. You ever done that, Manny? Just go to the driving range?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fun date.
Yeah.
That is a good.
Kind of cheap, too, you know?
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, a bucket of balls, go and hit it.
Yeah, man.
Back hurts the next day, but it's great.
Green grass out there, dude.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I mean, it rains a lot, but, I mean, you definitely get a lot of greenery out here. So.
Any of your characters golf?
You know, actually, I wrote a book called Addicted to Love.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of, it's funny, it's kind of a sci-fi love story. I can't pick a genre and write it, I just have to
mix it. Life is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's all about.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's about this little town of people who are passionately crazy in love with each other. No matter how old they are, like they can be 50 or 20 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just crazy in love with their significant other, whoever that is. And my hero character actually fools around with a golf club doing a little trick that I used to do and I actually enjoy.
What do you mean fooling around with a golf club?
That's awesome.
Well, you ever see Phil Mickelson? You guys, I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah, yeah.
Phil Mickelson will take a log wedge and hit a ball basically straight up in the air.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things I just enjoy doing. You know, I can do that and I play around with it, and I have my character doing that, and then his girlfriend sees it and thinks it's easy and tries to do it, and it doesn't work out quite as well the way, you know, if you try to hit it. Basically what you do is you lay the club flat and you slice across, so you're just nipping the cover of the ball, you're just barely touching it.
Uh-huh.
And if you take that kind of a swing and you actually hit any ball at all, it's a rocket that goes about 3 feet off the ground dead straight and kills the first person to fire.
Holy shit.
yeah, it's, you know, I've seen people break windows of the golf course and stuff like that.
Wow.
That would be a great murder.
Like, murder mystery
killed,
at the golf course.
Yeah, killed by the golf ball that came down.
How did you actually get into writing?
You know, it was one of those things. I had one of those jobs where I worked pretty hard. I did an 80-hour schedule. I managed a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had to get out of that. That was...
Well, I was looking for something as a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, writing's so much easier than managing people.
It is. You know, it's like, it's interesting because, you know, I work, I guess, with millionaires and everything else. And it's just like, God, you hate the job so much sometimes. You know, you're grateful to have a job, but it's like, I sit there, you know, when I have a dead moment and try to write new jokes, just something to inspire you. So
yeah, I wish I could write jokes like you, Manny.
Well, I mean, you'd probably write better ones than I do, so. Yeah.
One of the cool things about writing, though, in the computer industry, I was always, going to deal with something that was broken and it was really expensive.
Right.
Or I was dealing with somebody who was really upset about something, spending a lot of money, whatever.
Yeah.
And in writing, you're talking to people who are looking to have fun. You know, you're entertaining them, they're having a good time, and interacting with customers is a whole different experience.
True.
You know, it really is great. It's a great time.
So, what do you, did you see The Hobbit?
Did I see The Hobbit? The new movie, The Hobbit? No, yeah. I didn't.
No? Well, that feels nowhere.
What was the last movie you actually saw?
The last movie? I just saw Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh, how's that?
That was pretty good. It was made out to be this Obama propaganda thing. I don't know if you saw that in the news.
Oh, yeah, I read a little bit about it.
It really wasn't. It was more, I got the feeling it was like a documentary.
Uh-huh.
And, it was interesting because you saw the way all of the intelligence came together.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're interrogating all of these hundreds of people, and this woman is watching all the films on all the different interrogations and trying to put all this evidence together.
Right.
It's kind of one of those scenarios where there's so much information that digging through it is a nightmare, and the information is there, but it's just a matter of finding it.
Right. I was reading that the CIA was pissed, like, about the movie at one point, or was it, somebody was just livid.
Well, some of the news people were mad that, you know, was it Leon? I think Leon Panetta was in the movie.
Oh, okay.
He was?
Yeah, hey, director. Yeah, and Obama was on screen for that.
Oh, wow.
Excuse me for one second.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
Sorry, I'm battling a cold there.
Oh, no worries. But what's the weather like out there right now?
The weather is kind of like Seattle, probably. It's kind of gloomy and it's rainy.
Yeah, it's...
Winter is really gray. You guys
Wait, what was that?
I'm wondering if you guys are above our latitude. I think you are, right?
That's, yeah. I think so. I mean, it's usually pretty gray out. I mean, it's blue today, but... it's
blue and cold, though.
Yeah, it's cold.
It's like 30, 32. Cold as hell.
Yeah.
That is a weird saying, isn't it?
It is.
It's cold as hell. It's not cold. That would be summer.
There you go. It's cold as a witch's titty. I've never understood that one either.
Yeah. I've never heard that
you
one.
You never heard that one?
No.
You ever heard that one, CJ?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, see? So. Like, yeah, my uncle just says, like, random shit like that. He's like, cleaner than a broke dick dog, colder than a witch's titty, just random stuff. I'm like, okay, this is...
That should have been said in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Ron could have said it. Yeah. Hermione!
So what's the latest project you're working on as far as your newest book?
I'm working on a sequel to The End of Marking Time.
Oh, okay.
And
does he leave the room? No, spoil it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've written two books where it's really hard to write a sequel. The End of Marking Time, there's a huge surprise at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent about a year thinking about it, and now I'm writing a sequel with another guy in the box.
Oh, wow.
So it's a different guy and totally different outcome.
Did you ever see the movie Saw?
You know, I have seen snippets.
Yeah, I've never actually seen the movie, but is it kind of like that where people are just...
Nobody's cutting anything off of him.
Yeah, there's no, like, it's not amputee or anything like that, or?
No, it's not horror.
Oh, okay.
It's something, you know, that book was actually suggested for high school kids where,
Saw?
It's very clean, no.
Oh. okay. I was like, damn, they are trying to get these little motherfuckers.
You don't do your homework. You don't get your bat of syringes.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing I've done, so.
Oh, hilarious.
Ugly stuff.
Yeah.
No, but it's more, the end of Marking Time is about a guy who is trying to learn all the things he didn't learn in school.
Oh, okay.
And then learn, he comes from a really dysfunctional family where mom really had him so she could get a check from the government and didn't really care about him, didn't teach him to do anything.
Oh, wow,
and
okay.
Then threw him out when she was going to stop collecting.
Wow, I'm really liking this, storyline. I mean, it just seems like it's really, it probably tugs on your heartstrings a little bit.
So. Yeah, one of my big surprises, this guy is a career criminal.
Mm-hmm.
All he does is steal from people his whole life, and I figured people would hate him and they'd want him killed.
Yeah.
And the surprising thing for me was people were attached to the guy.
Man. So let me ask you this. Where can we pick up the book?
You can't. Any of my stuff you can get at Amazon is probably the easiest way.
Okay.
So we'll have a link on our website directly to your books.
You're a good man, Silas. I appreciate that.
I am.
I'm also at 22wb.com.
22wb.com.
Right. Yes. And on Facebook. So. I do spend a lot of time on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
The marketing? Is that what you do?
Oh, trying to be funny. when you're in a room all day, Facebook is kind of like company.
Oh, I hear you.
You get a bunch of friends out there and whatever happens. I have a new puppy. Did I tell you guys that?
I don't know. What kind of puppy?
She's an 8-week-old Maltese. She's a little fluff ball.
Nice.
Yeah, so people love to see her picture up there. And I'm getting very little sleep at the moment. I don't know if you guys have had an 8-week-old puppy before, but...
Oh, just rambunctious.
Yeah, well, she sleeps for an hour and then she's up.
Wow.
She doesn't want to sleep anymore.
So is it one of the dogs that sleeps in the bed with you, or is it one of those that just...
Well, she weighs about as much as a paperback.
Oh, okay.
She's about the same size. So she can pretty much sleep anywhere.
There you go.
We get her a little portable home to sleep in, but she likes to be sleeping on you, biting your face.
So now, were you the one who chose the dog, or did somebody else?
My daughter.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So now, do you have to walk the dog around the neighborhood, or do they take care of that?
Well, the dog doesn't do much of anything right now.
Oh, okay.
It runs around the house.
Nice.
Dogs don't do much of anything.
Well,
in general.
I think dogs
are
awesome.
They're not contributors.
I can't do cats. I mean, they're just...
The office that I work in right now, it's a... for a day job. It's a dog-friendly place, so people bring in their dog.
Oh.
By the way, whenever the place says dog-friendly, it means the boss wants to bring his dog.
Yeah.
In the play. So, but no, other people bring their dogs in, and they're like, so, it's that kind of environment, that was a bonus in hiring there, and I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm allergic to dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when I said that last time and said, oh, I'll just take medication, I never heard from them again. So I didn't bother to say it this time. I was like, I'll just deal with it and see how it really is. And they still don't know that I'm allergic because I'll go up and pet them because I want them to like me. So
it's crazy because I working in a, I used to work in a bank. And, we would allow people, who had the guide dogs and everything else to come in, but people would bring their pit bulls, and I'm like, that thing does not look like it's a guide dog. It's like, oh my god.
Were they black?
No.
A black blind man would have a pit bull.
I think the guy was Puerto Rican, so I mean, he was almost black, so I guess it counted.
Yeah.
But there was, and then, just the people who carry the dogs in their purses now, and, then she's like, it's my guide dog. I'm like, bitch, you are guiding that dog, right?
So he's like a mental guide dog.
True.
It tells me, I like this person.
Exactly.
This is a good person. I won't eat that.
CJ, so do you work with any other authors? I mean, do you kind of bounce stuff off people, or this is just all you kind of locked away?
Yeah, it's usually me locked away. We do get to go to VoucherCon and other shows. And
wait, what's the con called?
VoucherCon is the one I like the most.
Voucher?
Voucher.
Voucher.
Voucher. Yeah.
V-O-U-C-H-E-R. It's named after a guy, Alan Boucher, who was a big supporter of mystery fiction.
Wow.
And they bounce it all around, and it's probably similar to Comic-Con, a little smaller.
Did you ever come up to... Does it come to the West Coast?
Yeah, it was in San Francisco 2 years ago. I was there for San Francisco, and then we were in St. Louis. And I think it's the East Coast the next couple of years.
Oh, wow. So now do they fly you out, or do you...
No.
Oh, okay.
You fly you out and fend for yourself.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you get to see a bunch of authors and drink until 3 in the morning.
That's
and,
awesome.
Nobody sleeps at all. And, you know, those are great. You come back really invigorated to go and write.
Yeah.
Are they mostly self-published people there? Or?
No, Lee Child is there. Just let him
in there. And, nice.
You know, this show is pretty big. To give you some idea, it's probably 1,500 people.
Oh, okay.
And it's 4 or 5 days long. And panels, maybe 20 panels a day for 4 days.
Wow. Like
are authors wild people when they get together?
Not really. Some more than others. One of my mystery shows, I had a guy who just kind of walked around and didn't talk to anybody. He was a character. He's supposed to be acting. And I saw him, you know, I was in the midst of, you know, in these shows, people just are attacking you for information, right?
Yeah.
And three times I saw this guy center stage and not talking to anybody. No one was asking him any questions. He's just kind of standing there.
Wow.
So you get some of those, but you get some people who are really funny. A friend of mine, LJ Sellers, does some stand-up.
Oh, cool.
She's in Oregon, I think.
Where?
Oregon.
Oregon?
Oh, okay.
I don't know what city.
I wonder if I can get some time.
Yeah, or, you know.
Hey, come on our show.
Yeah.
Can I get some time, by the way, on your set?
We'll have to get her to contact us and either, you know, get her up here to do some time or, you know.
Yeah, I'll give you LJ's contact
information. Oh, cool.
I've been wanting to, I keep wanting to write a book. And actually, I just came up with, I'll look it up. I was like, I've decided I don't think fiction, like, is my thing to write. I could do screenwriting, but, I was like, I think I need one of those sort of pseudo-comedy books, where you write things. Let me run this by you. Okay. So the title is, it's 12 Things I Hate About My Life, and, subtitled, And Why I'm So Happy About It.
Is this self-help? It sounds like self-help.
I don't know. Well, it's helped me to write it. But I was thinking, like, each chapter can start off with something that I hate, like, in life. Like, I'm always broke. Like, that's right. The title of it. And I'm like, I'm so pissed how broke I am. I'm always this. But then I start talking about, you know, but when I do get something, I appreciate it so much.
Right.
And how I've learned to appreciate the little things, like, I just got, not like this is little, but we got a little check in the mail for Christmas. So I went and bought an HD TV, and I don't want to leave my house right now because I'm so in love with it. You know, where I know a lot of folks who have a lot of money, they'll get the TV, put it in there, like, well, that's cool. Well, let's go get some steak dinner somewhere. And they go off. And it's like, I'm like, I love these things when I get them. I get so excited about them. And I think part of it is being broke. That when I get these little gifts, I really learn to appreciate it. So I felt like a lot of things like that. Like,
it's kind of, you know, kind of unplugging will do the same thing for you.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of appreciating the little things in life.
Yeah.
You know,
so
we get so wrapped up in all this other crap.
No.
I started writing this as a bit, and then I thought, you know, this might actually be a decent little book.
Silas, do you do stand up as well?
He couldn't tell from the podcast,
well,
apparently.
He's not as funny as I am, CJ, but, you know, he definitely tries to do stand-up.
Yeah.
He's got an audition with Nickelodeon this week, which is, I guess, his big thing.
Yeah, because I talk a lot about my, you know, I talk about my daughter a lot, and I just talk about my life, kind of. And, you know, suddenly when I need, I felt like I was talking about my daughter all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly I need just a 7 to 8 minute set for this. And I'm like, oh, I have 5 minutes on my daughter. That's it. Holy crap, I gotta pull some of these old jokes out, start working them this week. But yeah, I do stand up. I'm about a year and a half in. But I've gotten to work at the Parlor and the Comedy Underground, but never on the weekends. I had Matt Black do that as an intro for me.
He's done a lot of open mics, so. No, he's just kidding.
I do showcases too, but yeah. I haven't hit the clubs yet on the weekend, but I'm working my way up the bar ladder, I guess.
CJ, quick question for you. So, being an author, do you find it hard to, like, read other people's books sometimes? Or, I mean, do you read a lot of other authors?
You know, I read a lot of my peers.
Oh, okay.
And I, you know, by peers, I mean struggling guys who write mysteries and thrillers.
Right.
And I'm reading a fantastic book right now by a guy named Alan Leveron.
Okay.
And, you know, it's great when you come across somebody that's just a total unknown who's really a fantastic writer.
That's awesome.
But, you know, I don't have any trouble picking up whatever book is out there.
Would you read my book, CJ?
Probably not.
I might learn something about being broke.
If you never, you should be, everyone should be broke in their life once.
Yeah, there you go.
Were you broke, Manny?
I've been broke, and I mean, you know, I always feel like I've been able to make ends meet.
You went to private school, though, didn't you?
I went to private school for like 5-6 years, and then it was funny. When my parents got divorced, it was like, holy shit, this is what being poor is like. So, I mean, we weren't dirt poor, but it was like, it definitely made you appreciate everything.
Like, how poor were you?
Okay, we were so poor that my dad had to date whoever whatever person was working at Toys R Us to make us have a decent Christmas. So
seriously? Is that a true story?
Sort of. He actually dated a chick from Office Depot, and she used to pay for our Christmases. It was so tacky. I was like, holy shit.
Wait, so your presents were from Office Depot?
Some of them were, but then like other ones were from like, you know, the video games and stuff. But she
actually was, now that wouldn't be as bad. Office Depot sells a lot of different things.
That's what I hear. So.
Like, they should have, too bad it was a little bit later.
Yeah. My dad got a Lexus from her, so she must have been doing well.
What?
Yeah.
CJ, have you ever been dirt poor?
I have been a little of all three. My family, you know, there's a story going around about my father, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason he buys popsicles is because he can't find a place to hunt them and kill them. That was us growing up. I mean, we can, you know, trap or skin or eat just about anything that kind of crawls around.
And we were reading about you, that what, you 4 generations, right, of living out there?
Yeah, this little tiny town. And I'm actually in Marion right now, which is a town over.
Oh, okay, okay. Wow. So it's like, everybody, does everybody know everybody, or?
You know, a lot of people know the people who have been here for a long time, but okay. It's also, we're on the south coast of Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
So there are a lot of, you know, people come here for the summer.
Right.
People come here because the ocean's here.
Mm-hmm.
So get some people like us who've been here, you know, family's been here 120 years, and then you get some people who, you know, moved in 6-7 years ago, you know, the newbies.
Yeah. See, I think that would be so cool. I mean, do you ever sit at the beach and just write, or do you try to just, like you said, keep yourself in the house and write?
I write everywhere. I was at my daughter's a cheerleader.
Uh-huh.
And I was at the basketball game last week, and I was writing a scene, and this lady turned around to me. She thought I was a high school talent scout. And I'm not, I don't know how I could be talent scouting, because I wasn't watching the game at all.
Yeah.
Did you pretend to be?
I'm waiting for half time.
Did you pretend to be when she asked?
No, I told her what I was doing. Well, once in a while, if you do that, you can still look.
Yeah, hey, there you go. That's true.
I write everywhere. Just wherever I go.
You know, that's interesting, because I've been carrying around a little tablet now where I just kind of jot down. I don't know what it is. I actually like writing on paper rather than just in my phone. It's something about it. It just feels organic. But, like, I'll be writing at my desk, you know, at work sometimes when I probably should be working. And people will come by. They're like, what are you doing? And, like, you know, I'll just tell them. And they're like, oh, you know what? I need to come to one of your shows. So it's almost a way of promoting yourself whenever you're out and about.
So. You know, I'm an author. You can pull out your book right there. And you should have it, like, in a trench coat.
Exactly.
You know? Do you do any paper? Do you print paper print ever of your books? Or
yeah, you know, I started in print, and that was my bread and butter for a long time. Until, like I said, I was talking to you earlier about Boyd.
Right.
And every one of my books is out in print.
Nice.
But ebooks have done a lot more for me lately. I don't know if you guys are interested in economics. I don't know if that's very funny, but
yeah.
For little guys, if you look at the book we were talking about, The End of Marking Time,
mm-hmm.
It's $2.99 for an ebook, and it's $15 for a print book.
Wow. Get out of here. That is crazy.
And I make almost the same amount on the ebook, which is just even crazier.
Wow.
I just got my wife a Kindle Fire HD for Christmas.
Right.
I'm a good husband.
I'm
trying to buy her love.
There you go.
So she hasn't used it to buy a book, but she's excited about that. I've never read a book on an ebook before.
And I've just never read a book.
Yeah.
So, fair enough.
wait, I want to ask about the hunting. You're in Massachusetts. Where do you hunt? Hello?
Oh, did we lose him? Oh, he's calling back.
And we're back with Black and a Half.
There you go. Yeah. Sorry, we're on dial up. So
I said, don't blame me. Wow, you got a headset and everything.
Professional. We're not.
Is this how you Xbox?
No, I don't Xbox. If I Xbox, I would never finish a flop.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, did you used to play video games?
I have. We had, what was that? The driving game with all the prostitutes and stuff?
Oh, Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, man, that was a great game.
You had a bit. We did a joke about that online last time.
I don't remember.
Were you going to use it about how you only play Queen?
Oh, no, it's true. I can't run over prostitutes. I can't, like, you know, even when the girl was like, you know, there's a girl in the other one that was always talking about your outfit, how ugly it was, and I couldn't, like, shoot her. I was like, this is...
You can't shoot me, get your money back.
Yeah, exactly, right? I was like, you know what? I was like, she serviced me in this. I can't. Yeah. It's like, I respect...
Real life.
Yeah, exactly. Just like real life. I'm like, I respect this.
When did you stop playing video games? Was it when you got married?
No, I think I played video games as a distraction from being married.
Yeah.
And I think it was kind of writing time. You know, I started writing in 1999, and the more I wrote, the less I had time to do most other stuff. My golf kind of tailed off.
Right.
Writing, you know, when you write fiction, I do a lot of research, and I love to write. I was working full-time at the time, and it just kind of sucks up all, you know, it's like a black hole, sucks up all available time.
Dude, yeah, that's awesome. Like, that's one thing I've been trying to do more with comedy is just actually, you know, research some of the topics that I'm actually talking about. You know, you don't want to sound like an idiot on stage, but so.
Okay, but. Every joke you do now, I'm going to ask you about.
No, you can't.
What did you do with that? Did you go to the Soul Circus?
Oh, that was, my mom.
Do you have like a story? You have a narrative that you work through as you go through a routine?
Kind of. I mean, I start off with, what I've been trying to do this year, my new focus is more... I guess autobiographical or like biographic. So it's like, you know, I kind of want to talk about myself and maybe elaborate on it and make it a little more, extravagant because like my mom, she actually is, you know, really supportive of comedy, but she sent me like a thing for being a ringmaster in a circus, but it was like a soul circus, which is like a ghetto black circus. So I was like, all right. So I talk about that. I talk about like the, you know, my dad and dating the women to like fund our Christmases and all kind of stuff. So
that is fun.
Oh yeah. So it's just finding the right angle on it. And it's funny because it went well when I did it all on Tuesday, but then I did it again last night on Friday and they were just like bombed.
Really?
Well, it was just, it's hard to do a 3-minute open
last
mic.
Last night?
Yeah.
Wait, you did the Soul Circus joke?
No, I did my dad, taking a shower with my dad as a kid. Which is just, yeah, that's a weird topic.
Right.
And then I did another joke about
it.
Yeah, it was so weird. And the crowd is just looking at me like, okay, that's really weird. And then I did, what was the other one?
But you have to embrace that shit.
And
that's a problem. You've been just enjoying the high life so long.
Yeah, it's tough because I work at probably the biggest club in Washington, and it's like, every show is a great show there, but it's like you go to these like bars and these dive bars, and it just takes you right back to reality. And you're like, "Fuck my life! Why do I do comedy?"
It's very humbling.
I read an interesting story, Manny, about that. Washington Post sent this world class violinist into the Metro subway.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear the story?
I think I heard a little bit about it.
Yeah, so this guy plays for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And 1,000 people walk by him and don't even notice him.
That's right.
He's like one of the best violinists in the world.
Yeah.
He's got a $3.5 million violin.
Wow.
And he sells out concert halls just playing by himself.
Man.
But standing there right in front of you, 3 feet away, no one wants to listen to him.
Wow. That is, isn't it wild? I mean, I guess it really just matters where you're at sometimes. It's like.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe 1,000 people would walk by Manny and not pay attention.
Let me ask you this, CJ. I actually, like, so, I don't know why this is, like, on my mind, but I've never read 50 Shades of Grey, but they're turning it into a movie now, right? Mm-hmm. How do you turn something like that into a movie without putting it on, like, I don't know, Cinemax or...
No, I didn't read much of the book.
Yeah.
I read a little bit of it.
Well, bring your wife in. We'll talk to her about it.
I don't have a wife now.
Oh!
This guy.
Source subject.
Yeah. Wifectomy.
Fair enough. Back on the single game. You got a dog now, so it's gonna game on.
I rebooted too. Yeah. I'm on my second marriage.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
she keeps it up. It's gonna be three.
There you go.
You hear that, woman?
Okay.
No, she totally left. I would never say that.
Three's
thank God she doesn't listen to the show. Woo! I'd be in trouble.
But yeah, so how would they? How would they actually do like a movie like that?
Well, Steve Larsson, and I can't think of the first book in his trilogy, but it was pretty gruesome and graphic, and they did a movie based on that book.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the movie, and you know they dulled it down a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Some of the scenes and you know, some of the stuff was just really difficult even to read.
Yeah.
But I guess they just came back to the bounds of, you know, where people can operate.
Okay.
I don't know how you do 50 Shades of Grey because it's all about bondage and...
Yeah, exactly. I was like, this is out there. But I mean, you know, I guess if Hollywood wants it bad enough and, you know, I guess the... When you think about its demographic that it's reaching out to, there's going to be women that are going to pay through the roof to see that movie, just like the Twilight. Exactly.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie The Secretary?
No. What was that about?
That was a popular movie, and it's kind of the same thing. It's about a woman who's cutting herself.
Oh.
And her boss takes her, you know, just like the 50 Shades guy there.
Right.
Takes her and starts tutoring her to make her more disciplined.
Oh, wow.
And, she actually grows from the experience, but that is a mainstream movie that you can go and rent, and they did it in a way that was clean, but you understood what was going on.
And it's called it's called The Secretary. Right. I gotta check it out.
I need some clean porn. Watch with the woman.
But it's psychological porn.
Yeah. Really. It's funny. I mean, it's, you know, I think men, like I always say, we're very visual. Women are very mental. So it's like, you know, they...
Girls marry ugly guys.
Exactly. You nailed it.
Exactly. Wait a second.
This guy right
hey,
here.
Hold on there.
But, yeah, no, it's wild.
I was going to ask you, do you watch much stand-up comedy?
You know, I saw Wayne Grady when I was in Houston.
Oh, nice.
Wayne Grady is
that guy is
beast.
Awesome.
He is. It's funny because I finally, like, I don't know, he was actually on a roast not too long ago where he was swearing and everything else, and I'm like, wow, I thought Wayne was so clean.
Oh, no, I've heard him on.
Yeah.
On, like,
how was he at the stand-up?
He was amazing. You know, it was a group of three or four comedians, and they did this improvisation that they had people do, you know, send different ideas up from the audience, and they did different scenarios where one guy was controlling the action on stage. And their time, they were so fast and so creative, it was just amazing to watch.
Oh, man. So was it kind of like a Who's Line, Is It Anyway kind of thing, or was it more
kind of like that thing. They did all sorts of different modes in the show.
Wow.
Oh, and it was a while ago that I saw it, but I came away really impressed thinking, you know, these guys must be incredibly bright.
Yeah.
You know, there are some mechanics that you must learn.
Mm-hmm.
But the creativity, you know, they were doing movies.
Yeah.
They were doing this movie as this character.
Right.
So,
oh, that's awesome.
Maybe does the Terminator or something, you know.
I've always been so impressed by, you know, kind of that, what's that, what do they call it? Not sketch, but more of the improv. Yeah, it's just like, just for them to be so, you know, quick and so witty about it, you know, the audience will throw out a topic, and it's like, I don't know how these guys pull out something.
Well, it's like constant practice. Well, I think you're always learning technique. Like, okay, this morning, I was going to ask you about this. Yeah. I was in a competition last night, and I didn't do very well, I don't think. I didn't place. So, and I was thinking about it. Well, it's a 7-8 minute set.
You're right.
Okay. I always, from my theater background, I approach it like I need to do a story. Mm-hmm. Like it's always like a little 7-minute play about me telling this. And I was thinking about it last night. I was like, man, he did these jokes, and man, they didn't even do transitions, and they keep passing on. And I was like, wait a second. Why the hell am I doing the transitions? Like, is it better, do you think, in like a competition setting, do you not worry about being as much of a half-hour show and just bam, bam, bam. Like, it doesn't even matter. I don't care about a transition. I'm going into the next joke right here.
Yeah, I don't know about you, CJ, but I've always felt like if you're at a comedy show, you kind of want it to feel organic. I mean, sometimes when they have the perfect segues and things, it doesn't feel like... It feels like it's more rehearsed than it's just off the cuff. So, I mean, I don't really use a lot of segues. Like, sometimes I'll actually say, what else did I want to talk about, you know, just to...
Yeah.
Or maybe look at somebody in the audience and say, you know, hey, how are you? And then if they lead into it, I'll go off that topic.
I'll do a weaker joke than I have just because I feel like I need to have something to transition. Where I realized last night, the guy's talking about, you know, Jaeger bombs, and then it suddenly turns to a thing about yogurt. Like, no transition, or about dating. And they're like, well, there's no transition, but it's jarring for a second, but then they get more of a laugh, and they get a bigger thing later, it seems, because they're able to get right to that big joke.
Well, I mean, I guess even in the book world, I mean, maybe it's more of you need those transitions, or do you ever jump from just one scene directly to another scene?
You can just, but it's shocking. You know, it's intentionally shocking.
Yeah.
And going back to the comedy, I think you're, you know, telling the story, you're building and building and building depth.
Yeah.
Right? So it can make the jokes funnier further on.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's like in a short set.
You probably need those without the transition. I would say.
Yeah, you just hammer them and make them laugh.
Maybe I'll do that tonight, and I'm going to do my penis joke. I don't have a lot of dirty jokes, but I'm going to do it tonight because I'm like, you know what? All these, I do a lot of clean stuff, but I gotta dirty it up. I think.
Yeah, you know, be true to yourself, but at the same time, you know, a good penis joke always works.
Hey, so. Do you get that in as a novelist? Do people say you got to be you? Just be you. Don't try to appeal to the people.
You know, if you don't appeal to the people, you don't sell books, though.
True.
You know, and you also, you know, I've done some things. The End of Market Time is one. The ending is kind of controversial. People either love it or hate it. And I wasn't going for something that was going to make everybody happy. I was going for the ending that fit the book.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that, you know, sometimes that plays well and sometimes it doesn't.
Hey, what's the worst hate mail you got?
The worst hate mail? I don't get much hate mail.
Well, if they didn't like it, did they? What do they say when they don't like something?
I get people. You know, I had one book that someone somehow thought was Christian fiction and didn't like it because, you know, it wasn't Christian fiction, which it really isn't.
Yeah.
what? You know, because I was swearing and, you know, blowing people up and stuff.
Oh, right.
You just shouldn't do that, right? But, it's fine. So
now, okay. Did they at all in their message? Or whatever they wrote, did they ever realize that it wasn't Christian fiction, or?
No, I never realized. You know, okay, I just thought of the funniest hate mail that I ever got, though.
Okay.
It was about my newsletter. I started my newsletter, and I was watching this guy, Ben Settle, who's a copywriter. And the idea was, be fun, be obnoxious, have fun, and the people who get it will enjoy it, and the people who don't won't, right?
Right.
And there was some sexual stuff and whatever, and people were writing me saying, God, I love the new newsletter. This is so fun. Right? And then I got one little old lady who wrote me and said she wasn't going to subscribe to my newsletter anymore because she didn't want her husband to think I was hitting on her. You know, like, she's obviously 60 years old, you know, and
yeah.
She gets out of the house. She didn't want her husband to think that we're having this poor love affair with
my newsletter. Who is this, CJ? Oh, really?
That's the worst hate mail that I ever got. She was really mad. She went on and on and on.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you'll run in, like, even in the comedy world, you run into the crazy old ladies that are just like, you know, I don't like that you use the F word. And I'm like, well, I didn't really use it as much as the guy before me, but, you know. It's weird because you're always trying to be respectful to, you know, the older crowd, but it's like, I don't know if you knew you walked into a comedy show.
Well, but then it's weird. Like, I'll meet somebody who's at work, they're 23 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, well, I don't like hearing a lot of the dirty stuff, so they were like seeing if I was a clean comic because she didn't want to, and I was like, you're young, you're not, enjoy a good F-bomb, you know, like, don't get caught up on.
I guess, you know, it makes me think, because even, probably with you, CJ, it's like, you run, I mean, there's no one author or no one comic for everybody, you know, you're not going to please the world, so. Yeah,
you have to do what works for you, and I think you learn over time
right. What
really works for you, and you go with it. And I think when you do that, you also enjoy it. I find when I'm writing fast and really riveted to something I'm writing, people will enjoy that later on.
Right.
You know, and that's what you have to do.
That's awesome.
And the best thing I've found, the material, is I just steal Manny's jokes.
Yeah.
That usually goes really well.
So, okay, there we go. Well, what were you about to say, CJ?
I was going to ask if I could see you guys. Do you guys have videos up anywhere?
You know, I had videos up, and then my job was like, it was weird. I was in a conference with, like, these bigwigs, and one of the high-up execs, like, made a joke, and nobody laughed. And then they came around to me, and I said a joke, and everybody laughed. And he was like, oh, I don't know if you guys know this, but Manny's on YouTube. You should check out his videos. And they weren't appropriate jokes, so I took everything down. And I, you know, just so I didn't lose the job. But, so
at, at the bank?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to start putting more stuff back up. But,
I'll send you, I'm editing a video for, I'm going to submit to a big festival out here. So when I edit that down, I'll send you the audition tape so you can see it. Just got to lower it.
There you go. So here's my question of the day, CJ. So if I could give you $5 million, to make whichever book into a movie, which book would you run with?
A book of mine, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it would be The End of Mark and Time.
Okay.
Because I'm having fun with that. I think it would be a good $5 million movie.
Right.
And not a lot of effects and stunts.
And then who would you cast in it?
You know, I saw a guy recently that would be great, and I can't think of his name. It's like a young... Who's the guy who... Johnny Depp did Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Orlando Bloom, or you're talking about more like...
He's a young guy. God, I wish I had... I wish you had asked me that 3 days ago. Because I'm not a huge movie buff. But yeah, yeah, it would be a young guy. It would be... who's the guy that was on Titanic?
Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah, he's done, you know, he did Django Unchained, yeah, and he did Titanic, and he's done all these different things. He did, he was in the Indiana Jones movie too, wasn't he?
Oh, Shia LaBeouf. Was that him?
I'm confused, yeah. But yeah. I think DiCaprio would be the guy.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because you know,
I think he's got some range, and I think he would be able to play the variety of emotions.
Oh, definitely. Like, did you ever see Inception?
I did.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought he was great in that, and...
That was my kind of movie. I think you got, you know, do you guys read much fiction?
Not really. I need to get back into it.
I used to before I did. I started reading a lot of plays, and now comedy just sucks everything out of me.
Was that based on a book?
No, I was thinking of Through Violet Eyes.
Oh, okay.
You guys were talking to Boyd about different stories, right? Through Violet Eyes is a good, it's like a sci-fi about a group of people who can talk to the dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's kind of... a little bit about it's partially supernatural and partially mystery. It's a really good series.
That sounds like it'd be a good movie.
But it's like Conception. Conception was really deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was this multi-layer. I thought it was really cool when you're on the bus and the bus moves and then the people all the layers down.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. Start feeling it. Moves. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. So the movie was called Inception. Conception, I think, is a porno.
That'd be a fun.
That's a porn. But I'll check that out. Who's in that movie? Wait.
Conceive an idea.
Yeah, that's true. We're about out of time. Where's the best site to check you out on again?
Best place to hook up with me is 22wb.com. If people want to talk to me, I'm on Facebook just about every day.
Awesome. Okay. Oh, yeah, you have a page that you can like?
You can link from my website over to my Facebook page. Yeah.
Okay, nice. CJ West, author.
CJ West Fans.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/CJ West Fans.
CJ West Fans. Is there more than one CJ West?
You know, CJ West is a really popular name.
Yeah,
really?
I saw a few online.
Is it initials for something, or is it just a name?
CJ, I just made it up. West is actually not my real name. It's a pen name.
Oh, okay.
Right, but CJ, is that a CJ?
My first and middle are Christopher James.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that what everybody? I don't know. I was like, man, someone's lazy parents just decided to do two letters.
No, yeah, there's CJ. There's nobody just regularly named CJ. It's probably
like, I was going to name my kid...
This guy.
LP. What's it stand for? Nothing. It stands for Daddy's Lazy. DL. DL Hughley.
There you go.
Daddy's Lazy. That's what it stands for. Okay, so we'll have people check out there. They can buy your book online. What else can they do?
Let's see. Definitely keep following the series. I wanted to know about Thug Book. What was that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Thug Book is you guys do like the sci-fi, right? Thug Book was an idea. It was two college guys create this website. It's like a social networking site.
Okay.
And what they do is they start posting pictures of criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Facebook for criminals.
Oh, wow.
Criminals are posting their pictures, right? So they're also linked on a map, so you see where the criminals hang out.
Right.
And sometime during the story, a group of people starts going and bumping them off.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of fun. Fun story. It's a short story. I think it's 19,000 words, but I had fun with that one. You know,
okay.
Get some of my aggression out.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Good stuff. Well, yeah, definitely. So the 22WB, definitely on Amazon. We'll have the link up for that. And then any big things you want to promote?
No, you know, The End of Market Time is the book that I'm really excited about. I just released a book called Dinner at Deadman's.
Nice.
Did it just come out?
Dinner at Deadman's was out in October.
Okay.
And it's about a guy who loves antiques and junk. Probably not up your alley. It's more of a traditional mystery.
Okay.
But I like mysteries.
You do?
I was in a murder mystery company.
No kidding.
Yeah. I wasn't very good. But I was in it.
He was the guy standing around not talking to anybody.
Yeah. I just did one 2 months ago. I did a murder mystery, actually.
Did you really?
At a sorority house. That was nice.
Oh, wow. Oh, that
sounds awesome.
They were all trying to get me to get the clues. And I built that. I was like, I'm married. I don't get touched much.
That'd be great. It's like, get the clue. It's in my pants.
My funnest murder mystery story, there's a guy. He's kind of hot, I think, the ladies thought.
Yeah.
And there was a murderer. The guy was suffocated, and he had a plastic bag that he walked around with, you know, sticking out of his pocket.
Yeah.
And then we left it at the murder scene, and all of these women later, when he's down on the stage, were rummaging through his pockets, his pants pockets, everything.
Oh, that's an old trick. I did that all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, oh, I have this clue in my pocket. Ladies.
Dinner
at Deadman's is about a guy. It's about Deadman's is an estate sale, right? So the dead person's stuff is being sold off, and it's the book about a woman who's in her 80s and dies, and everyone assumes it's natural causes, and the guy who's selling off the stuff finds some clues in her belongings and discovers that she was actually killed.
Wow.
Okay. Well, then I'll check that. You know what? I will check that out because I've been wanting to get back to some mysteries.
Definitely. And CJ, if you get a chance to cast anybody in any movies and you need a comedic relief that's black, throw me in there. Greatly appreciate it.
Or if you need a half, too.
Yeah, there you go.
You guys are going to have to come East Coast because I'm going to want to watch it be made.
Yeah, definitely. We will be there.
Black and a half on tour.
Black and a half on tour, man.
Black and a half.
All right, CJ.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. This has been a blast.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Tennessee. This is awkward now. Out of your way.
It's
I don't know how to close this. I don't know how to close the window. Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing grass. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough?